And here we go. Welcome. I am Matt. This is the Anarchist Investor coming at you every Monday through Friday, live at 12 Eastern on the Ungovernable channel. We are talking about contrarian investment, the economics, the economy, markets, crypto, all kinds of other stuff. Everything except, well, we talk a little bit about the Wall Street Casino, but we're not trying to funnel our money there because it doesn't work for us there. So with that, I'm going to pull down the banner and I'm going to make sure that we are looking at where we are today, which is we are in Japan. Konnichiwa, everyone. How are you? we're looking at the Japanese yen. This was on the hold screen leading into the live today. Why are we in Japan today? Well, overnight. Actually, all this week, central bankers are meeting throughout the Western world. And overnight, Japan finally figured out that on a long enough time frame, economics is undefeated. And how do we know that? Well, Japan, for the better part of, I'd say, you know, since 2016 at least, has been in this easy money policy of their central banking. And the reason why they've been in the easy money central banking scheme is because they feel like they've been having to fight deflation for a long period of time. And the problem with the deflation that they're fighting is it wasn't just a monetary issue. It was a demographic issue. Okay. Japan has a much different demographic makeup than most of the other world's countries, other countries within the world, in terms of its aging population. It has for a long period of time. And so they felt like they had to keep their interest rates not at zero, but actually at negative 0.1% over the last 8 or so years. And they come to find out that easy money, believe it or not, is not the key to economic growth and prosperity. In fact, they've been trying to fight against actual economic forces for the last 8 years, and in many cases, the last 20 or 30 years. And their manipulation at the central bank level has not been working because they're fighting a losing game. And as opposed to leaning into the economics, they've actually been trying to fight against it and do the exact opposite. And they're paying the price for it. And they have been paying the price. And they're going to continue to pay the price. So what happens? Overnight, Japan and their central bank decide to actually create nominal interest rates, at the very least, that are zero or positive 0.1%. It might not seem like a huge change, but from a philosophical standpoint, this is a gigantic transition. If you've noticed, this move was kind of anticipated. And also, if you notice, this kind of has the opposite of effect of what you would think it would have. So Japan raises interest rates. Typically, that would cause their currency to deflate, meaning that other world's currencies would inflate relative to that. But we're actually seeing the opposite of that. And why is that? It's because Japan's economics aren't the same as the rest of the world, or at least economics is the same, but their situation is completely different, right? And so they raised rates and they actually saw their currency continue to weaken as a result of it. And in fact, what they found out is over the last 8 years, they've succeeded in weakening their currency, but not necessarily creating any kind of prosperity or economic growth as a result of it. And so they've actually, you know, doubly harmed the economy and the people living in Japan as a result of their central banking policy. So that being said, overnight, the Japanese central bank is essentially affecting the value of the dollar, which in turn is also affecting the broader market in general. We're also seeing some jockeying for position in terms of the upcoming U.S. Federal Reserve decision. And then you also have the other Western world central banks that are coming up with their decisions, namely, you know, the European Central Bank and a couple of the others. And we're seeing real time play out exactly what has played out in Japan over the last 8 years. And it's that when you're fighting actual economic forces, natural economic forces, you can only fight them for so long. And the more good money you throw after bad, the worse it gets, right? The fallout gets, and it's also a diminishing return. So for, you know, the first couple of bucks or the first couple of rate cuts, you probably get some decent purchase. And then after that, it's been, essentially a decreasing return on those exorbitant or those huge changes that have had to happen, those interventions. The Federal Reserve, actually, to their credit, again, I'm not saying that they're doing things the right way, but what I am saying is they kind of understand it, at least to a certain extent. That's why they pre-bailed out all of the companies in the United States, and they've gone on this interest rate hiking path. It's because they know, and they saw the writing on the wall back in the mid-20-teens, that their low interest rate policy, they basically had run out of dry powder. They didn't have any powder left. They didn't have any ability to affect the economy. And depending on who you listen to, the perception of their effects on the economy is also really what they run off of. The actual rate cuts or rate increases are secondary. It's actually the psychological effect of those things that's important, not the actual economics of increasing or decreasing interest rates. So this is something that's playing out today. And so I'm going to walk you through the markets really quickly, but just to kind of like, double down on the story that I'm looking at, let me pull up the actual decision. Again, this is from Reuters. Overnight, Bank of Japan scraps radical policy, makes first rate hike in 17 years. Set the new short-term rate of zero to a whole 0.1% interest rate. This is in opposition to the fact that prior to today, or prior to last night, that they had been a range of zero to negative 0.1% interest. Think of it this way. To keep your money in a bank, you actually had to pay money, right? Like, that's the interest rate that they were trying to impose on the marketplace. And it ended up having a very little effect counteracting the demographic economics that they're suffering over there in Japan. And so, yeah, if you want to, if you just go in and you Google, if you want to look at this, I should have put the link in the description. But if you want to Google, you know, Reuters Japan rate hike, okay, it'll be the first thing that comes up. It goes through kind of a lot of the dynamic that's underlying here. And like I said, their situation is much different than a lot of the other countries in the West, though. A lot of the Western countries are moving in this direction: reduce birth rates, increase average age. The economic circumstances are trending toward what Japan is going through now. And so, in typical fashion, if we don't learn from history, we're destined to repeat it. Well, that's exactly what's happening in Japan, or at least they didn't read an economics book anytime within the last 40 years. And this experiment has kind of failed for them. And then also, I wanted to just pinpoint to reinforce the ineffectiveness of this policy. If you look at the GDP growth of Japan, it has been trending down considerably since the 60s. Okay. They've gone through a number of different economic regimes, central bank regimes, and they've done all kinds of things: interest rate fixing, you know, easy money policy, hard money policy. Nothing has been able to right the ship, or at least change the direction of the ship. It's continuing to fall lower because they have an aging population, reduced young workforce. They also have a reduced, basically, competitiveness in terms of their currency, because despite their currency being weak and all that, to try and support manufacturing, their wages are in direct opposition to that, because when you have a lack of a young workforce, just because your currency is weak doesn't necessarily make things cheap to produce and export. And so that's something that Japan has also been fighting with. And so, as you see, they've suffered. Their economic growth has been downtrending. And within the last couple of years, they actually had a recession last year, and they just, almost like the United States, they refused to just call it a recession. They just changed the definition and, oh no, we didn't have a recession. You know, it was just a technical recession, but it was a glitch in the numbers, right? So anyway, all right, let's walk away from Japan, but still keep our eyes on the prize in terms of how it is affecting the overall markets. Oh, and from that standpoint, the title of today's live cast really has to do with the pending decision that's coming from the FOMC. There is, the stage has been set. Okay. I talked about this yesterday. I wrote about it yesterday too. The stage has been set. The expectation is that the Federal Reserve is going to cut rates. We're going to go back to this easy money scheme that we had for the prior 40 years, which, by the way, we're no longer in that economic cycle. We're in a new economic cycle. And so if they just try and use the same old playbook, it's not going to work the way that they think it's going to work. So everyone is expecting rates to be cut. But this meeting, they know rates aren't going to be cut this meeting. They're going to stay the same. What they're looking to find out is whether or not rates are going to be cut in May, the end of April, beginning of May, or if we have to wait now until June, July, or what I've been looking for is I actually think that the markets in April and May will end up getting roiled. They will throw a fit. They will throw a tantrum because they're not getting the easy money policy that they're anticipating and that they want. And you'll see some chaos in the market. And finally, the Federal Reserve will cut. And it'll probably be June, July, maybe even as late as September. Interestingly enough, just before the presidential election, but we're not going to get into that conspiracy talk here. But that being said, I think you're going to see a cut, but not until markets throw a little bit of a fit here and you see some chaos and some volatility. And so we're going to look at that going forward. All right. So now, setting the stage with all of that. And just a reminder, I'm live. I want to hear your comments, your questions, your feedback. You can throw them into the chat. I will address them as we are live and talk about them. And you know what? Even if it's feedback that's like, you're stupid, you don't know what you're talking about, whatever, let's talk about it. I complacency is what causes really bad investing. And so I want to hear back from you. And just a reminder, the algo doesn't like me very much. I speak my mind. I don't pull any punches. I'm critical of the Federal Reserve. So down in the description, definitely give me a sub, a like, an upvote, a share. If you are listening to this or you're on a platform that doesn't necessarily have the links down below, you can go to anarchistinvestor.substack.com, subscribe for free. And guess what? April 1st, you get a shot at some free actual money. 4 ounces of silver will go to 4 free subscribers. And so each one of these is worth just under $25 today, as we'll see in the chart. But we're talking about almost $100 worth of silver going out to free subscribers. Doesn't cost you anything. So something to keep in mind, definitely hit that subscribe button on Substack. All right, I'm sharing. We're looking at, let's move away from currency land. Let's look at crypto. Bitcoin is taking a move lower. It needed a correction. It moved really high, really fast. I'm actually going to take a shorter term time frame here. And yesterday we were talking about how we were trading between this range. See the ping pong match that happened between these two levels, 65,000 and 69,000, give or take. Those were the previous two highs, the previous two all-time highs before we set the all-time high with this move here. That's how I got to those numbers. These numbers have been tested time and time again to see whether or not there's enough buying support to keep Bitcoin above that level. Well, we broke through it and lost it, okay? Then we retested it and lost it, and then we went back into the range. Now we're below the range, and if you noticed, Bitcoin this morning was down 6, 7%. It was a big move. We hit a low down around, I'd say like 62,500. Again, my numbers will be slightly off because I look at the pairing with Tether as opposed to just straight up with the US dollar, but we're seeing a bounce. So Bitcoin's bouncing back up to the bottom of this range that happens to be, 65,000, 64,900, and it's going to retest, okay? This is normal price action, or at least it's as normal as we can expect out of crypto. It's retesting 64.9, and we'll see whether or not we can get back up into this range. If we can't, then you could have some continued weakness. Again, this fits with the narrative. It fits with stronger dollar, because typically weaker dollar means inflation and risk assets, or at least inflationary assets, go up, okay? And so Bitcoin is looked at as a proxy for hard money, all right? Analogous to gold or silver. And when the dollar gets weak, Bitcoin is supposed to go up. When the money printer goes burr, Bitcoin goes up to the moon. Okay. At least that's the way the dynamic works for right now. Right now, we have a stronger US dollar today. And so we're seeing Bitcoin suffer a little bit. That has taken down the rest of the complex with it. Ethereum's down over 6% today. Again, if I pan out, Ethereum's had a huge move. This is the weekly chart. I mean, Ethereum's just been on a tear. We've gone from like a recent low back in the end of 2023 or October of 2023, coincidentally, when the stock market started to rally, something also to keep in mind. I think a lot of crypto folks discount how connected crypto is to the Wall Street casino, at least in terms of the trends. But so we went from about 1500 in ETH all the way up to topping out at, what is this, 39.8? No, sorry, almost 4100. So we topped out. That's, I mean, more than a double, a 2.5x, give or take, in ETH. This thing needed to take a breather, okay? So regardless of what's happening with the FOMC and things like that, just good, natural, healthy price action, ETH needed to take a breather. And so that's what it's doing right now. Same thing with Bitcoin, okay? The rest of the complex is down with it. There's only a couple of the smaller, like, micro caps that I follow that are up, and they've been down the last couple of days as well. So there's just some relief stuff happening there on those. You know, I've been following Solana. Solana was just kicking ass and taking names. Well, guess what? Solana reached a peak right here up around like 200, just over 210. We're at 210. It's now all the way back down to 181. It's down like almost 8% today. Okay. Again, nothing unusual. When you go on a tear from like, you know, a double, right? Like you go plus 100%, to take a pullback of 7-8% isn't necessarily the end of the world. Now, what you do have to watch is, once you're in that pullback, do we then catch some support and continue to move higher? Or does the pullback continue on because there's a lot of profit taking? I think there's going to be some linkages between crypto and the broader, you know, Wall Street casino moving forward. So you have to be aware of what's going on. And so if we do see weakness in the market, and a continuing strength in the dollar, you're probably going to see continued weakness in crypto, okay? It's, you know, it's not a panacea, right? Am I using that word correctly? It's not like an isolated thing, right? Like the crypto market just doesn't run on its own mechanics. It is affected by monetary policy and things like that outside of it, which is why, as an anarchist investor, I like paying attention to crypto, but at the same time, I have to understand what the ghouls are doing in Washington, D.C. and at the Federal Reserve and on Wall Street to understand maybe what's going to happen to crypto in the future. All right, let's look at fixed income really quickly. We keep looking at high yield debt. And if I throw up the daily chart, or maybe even a better look would be the 4-hour chart, this is running in opposition. So this is something you have to watch out for. This is running in opposition to some of the other risk off that's happening today. High yield corporate debt caught a bid today. Okay. This resistance line, it's still playing with. So there's not, it's not a given, right? Like even if it pops through this resistance line, if it comes right back down through it, it means it wasn't strong enough to hold it, right? But there's a lot of jockeying for position today, and people in the debt markets, specifically the junk debt market, they're buying risk, okay? So they're anticipating that Jerome Powell is going to come out tomorrow and basically say what everyone else knows he's going to say. We're keeping rates flat. We're looking for an excuse to cut, right? But they might even be expecting an even more dovish scenario where Jerome Powell comes out and he says, you know, a cut is on board for May, right? If he comes out and says that, it's risk on. Bitcoin to the moon, gold, silver to the moon, oil to the moon, copper to the moon, high yield, you know, junk corporate debt to the moon, all the risky stuff. And you might even see a resumption of the AI trade happening. Okay. That's what it looks like they're trying to bet on right now. Again, we don't know whether or not that plays out until we actually get the data points that tell us where it's going to go and then see how things react to it. U.S. Treasuries, on the other hand, or no, not on the other hand, in sympathy with this, or maybe vice versa, Treasury yields being down as a result of some of the jockeying for position is causing people to take risk in the high yield corporate debt environment. Treasuries yields are down, meaning people are bidding the bonds up, meaning people are expecting a dovish Fed tomorrow. Okay, so all this is something to keep in mind. Equities and risk assets are taking a step back. They're booking some profits. They're fearful of a hawkish Federal Reserve announcement. The debt markets are looking for a more dovish Fed. And so we'll see which one ends up being correct. All right, let me look at, I typically don't look at the stock market indexes because I really don't give a crap. That's the casino, but I will look at the dollar. The dollar is strong today, again, because of yen weakness and a couple of other currency pairs that are weak against the dollar. Again, jockeying for position. Some people are expecting a hawkish Fed. So we'll see whether or not that follows through tomorrow. The VIX is actually down today. This is another thing that doesn't necessarily line up with thinking that Jerome Powell is going to come out all, you know, hawkish and against rate cuts tomorrow. The VIX, or the volatility index, being down essentially means that people are expecting a positive move into the future, or at the very least, no huge moves one way or the other. So we'll wait to see what happens. I mean, it could just be a blah day tomorrow and things just kind of resume whatever direction that they're headed in, or there could be a pretty powerful pop. But right now, the volatility market is looking like people aren't too worried. They're not buying a lot of puts and hedging against calamity, from what I can see. That being said, there is a trend in the marketplace right now of extreme complacency. Put call ratios and things like that within the casino are showing that a lot of people just think that the market's going to continue to gravitate up ad infinitum. That's usually the moment where some stuff hits the fan. And like I said, I'm anticipating sometime between now and say like May for that to happen. I think there's going to be an upset that's then going to compel the Fed to act. But we'll have to see whether or not my Nostradamus hat is working properly. Oil is up. Okay, another risk on situation here. Oil is up and it's anticipating, I don't know what. I don't know if OPEC has a meeting coming up. I think a lot of the supply cuts have been affirmed. And so like there haven't been really any changes in the supply. And the supply, I think right now, is looked at as, you know, constrained. Oil would be falling apart right now if there was some kind of perception in the marketplace that recession was dropping demand for oil. So right now, it's one of those two, or it could be both at the same time. It could be just, you know, steady as it goes demand, because the economy is not great. It's just okay. And the supply constraint that's being artificially placed on it is pushing oil higher. That being said, long term, you know, two of the only things I really care about in the casino are oil and uranium right now. And oil continues to be strong here off of these lows that we experienced back in the end of 2023. So something to keep an eye on there. All right, copper's down. Again, strong dollar. Copper is affected by the dollar strength. And so copper is pulled back after a big move higher. Gold and silver, same deal. Gold, interestingly enough, again, continues to look like Bitcoin. So for you Bitcoiners out there that are like, it's digital gold. Well, I mean, it kind of behaves like it, right? I'm looking at gold. Gold popped through the upper end of this trading range a few days ago. Actually, couple weeks ago. Put in a new all-time high, pulled back, tried to hold the upper end of that range at give or take 2158, 2160. It's punched through, punched back above. So now we're kind of like straddling it, right? We got one foot on either side of the line. Gold's going to be really insightful tomorrow and through the end of the week to see what direction we're moving in, at least in the near future after this FOMC meeting. So that's something to keep an eye on. Silver, same deal. Silver had a big run. It continues to pull back a little bit. People are taking profit on this move higher. And so we'll have to continue to watch. Again, I'm a big silver bug. Like I think silver outperforms gold here within the next 2 years, especially if the Fed puts its foot back on the gas and starts the money printer again. So something to keep an eye on with silver. And then lastly, uranium. Again, I have to pull the weekly chart here just so it looks like an actual chart. Uranium is trading down again today. So it continues that pullback. It could still get cheaper. Again, I'm initiating and taking small little nibbles on the URA ETF. This thing is pulling back to like a longer term trend line, or at least a medium term trend line that goes back to the bottom in 2020. I think that this is actually a really, really good entry point to start dollar cost averaging. If you don't have any exposure to uranium, dude, long term, uranium is going to be a bull market. It is, I think a lot of people know by now, they're just not willing to admit it. It is the solution, right? Fossil fuels, the way to getting off of fossil fuels. You know, the environmentalists want to tell you it's, you know, solar panels and all this other stuff, which, by the way, the solar panels use a lot of silver. So if they do continue to push this this solar narrative, silver benefits from that as well, from the industrial demand. But uranium and fusion reactors are ultimately the answer. And so I don't know what to tell you. If you're not in on this train, that's fine. You don't have to. I'm just a guy with an opinion. I'm not a financial advisor. So you don't, you know, I'm not telling you exactly what to do. You're supposed to make your own decisions. That's my disclaimer that I make like a dozen times a day. But that being said, I'm looking at uranium as basically the oil of the future. This stuff could be, I mean, they call it yellow gold for a reason, okay? Or yellow gold, caked gold, something like that. But yeah, uranium is something you should definitely be looking at. I'm starting to initiate a dollar cost average position in URA to get exposure to it. Again, not huge amounts of money. I also like a barbell effect. I like a very large portion of my portfolio to be in safe, secure stuff. Okay. And then a piece of my portfolio to be in these kind of like what would be called asymmetric one side kind of bets where I could lose a little bit of money or I can make a whole bunch. Okay. The Wall Street narrative of like dollar cost average into the S&P and average 8% a year, everything like that. That's a freaking fairy tale. It's been disproven a multitude of times and yet people continue to parrot it. Okay. It's very timing based. You have to have some sense of what the timing is. I think the timing is right for uranium. In fact, I'm probably a year and a half late. I mean, you know, the 2020 into 2020, you know, one and 2022 run up, you know, this first pullback was probably the ideal entry point when it was pulling back from the highs in 2021. But so just keep in mind, you could be a little bit late. Okay. Being a lot late, you know, it's tough on the risk management side. But this one, I'm definitely looking at long term. All right, I'm going to pull down the screen share. That's all I got in the markets. I'm looking at the comments really quickly to see if there's any quick questions. A reminder, I am here to discuss what you guys are looking at. If you have anything that I don't look at or I don't reference and you want to talk about it, definitely throw it into comments. I would love to talk about it on the live cast. And with that, that's all I have for today. So I will be back with you tomorrow as usual. Again, here every Monday through Friday at 12 Eastern. I definitely appreciate you spending the time with me today and every day. And just a reminder, subscribe, hit the like, the bell, notification bell, upvote, share, and subscribe at anarchistinvestor.substack.com. So with that, I appreciate you. I love you. Have a great afternoon.